All right, welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance, coming to you on a very soccer-full Wednesday night. There's like a million games going on.
You have your choice.
You can watch whatever you want. You can watch any and all MLS teams. Pretty much everybody, I believe, is in action tonight. And then CONCACAF Champions League has started. Yeah, there was like a bunch of cup matches today in England, all of which weren't televised.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into that later.
USL Championship matches tonight, if that's your cup of tea as well. So
it used to be.
It did. Once upon a time.
Once upon a time. That tasted real good.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a smorgasbord to choose from this evening on a Wednesday night, which is just one of those occasional reminders you need about how great we have it in this day and age in American soccer when we have a gluttony of choices.
That not only is there a zillion games, but they're pretty much all relatively accessible.
Yeah.
Like, there's not like, oh, you have to have that Fox Sports World on that, like, the highest end cable package available to get, you know, the one Premier League game, not even airing live.
The Sports Plus package. Remember when there were bonus channels that you got for free where you could just watch the Premier League channels and like every single Premier League match was live broadcast, like simulcast if they were happening at the same time?
I never had that luxury, but I was somewhat aware of it.
Yeah, it was just a few bonus channels that existed solely for showing the Premier League for a few years. It was glorious.
Yeah. I was explaining that to someone the other day. Like, there was a time where it was just Fox Sports World or Fox Soccer Channel when it became Fox Soccer Channel, where, like, you know, your game would, you know, like most games on Saturday are like a 10 a.m. game. But you had to sit there and look at their schedule of when your game was going to air because only one game was airing live.
Oh, yeah.
And so if it wasn't yours, you were like, oh, okay, when are they going to play our match? Oh, 6 p.m. tonight? Great.
You'd usually get a couple, you know, you get the early match and then the second match. And if you're really lucky, you'd get a third match in there. But you're right. They would come back and play the other ones later into the day.
Yeah.
And it did make for like an all day soccer viewing experience at that point, which was just totally unheard of even at that point.
I do miss the loop, right? The Fox Soccer Channel was just, I just called it the loop because it was just soccer games on 100% of the time, except for that one they would occasionally play Dream Team.
Yeah, I was just going to say the soccer based soap opera, which I'm going to say I watched a ton of just because it was on after I had had my all day soccer marathon.
I think you and I went down this rabbit hole relatively recently where we found a lot of the episodes on like YouTube or something like that someone had like,
oh yeah, totally
bootlegged and thrown on there.
Yeah. It sometimes deep down, I'm like, what if I had a Dream Team kit and how specific of a reference would that be?
And not many people getting that one, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the Ted Lasso jersey before Ted Lasso existed.
Right. Like when season one first started airing, early pandemic, and you somehow got a hold of a Greyhounds jersey.
Yeah. Could I somehow get my hand on a big green jersey or perhaps a Ladybugs jersey?
Ladybugs jersey would be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Trying to think what the other ones. There was another show. There was a one that was similar to Dream Team. I forget the name of it, but well, it was the same kind of trash, like awful British, like soap opera kind of vibe to it.
Mm.
Everybody, all the dude's hair had like a pound of gel in it.
There was a Latino based one, I think.
Well, there was that. There's also like, I mean, yeah, there's been like a series on Netflix that was a Spanish a Mexican show about it's, like a Mexican club team named Club de Cuervo, I think it was.
Perhaps if you are a listener and you remember any of these terrible soccer shows, please tweet at either Jeremy and I. We'd love to hear about these and potentially look them up and watch them on YouTube before we record at some future point.
There was that one show that was on that. Remember that channel El Rey? Which was like a bizarro channel. I think the only time I ever got to watch it is when you and I had that free Fubo subscription back when Fubo was just about soccer.
Yes, I do.
And not an actual legitimate streaming platform for all cable.
Yeah, I do. I do remember those days.
And there was an El Rey, and there was this. It was like this guy who played for a team. It's like some fake pro team in LA, but then like he was also like. Forget if he was like involved in organized crime or like he was also a detective. It was so weird.
This one,
but it was like a soccer / like action show, like
Miami Vice meets crappy soccer show.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. I could get on board with this.
I'm sold. Sold already. I'll take 10 seasons of that, please.
It sounds a little bit like Michael Scorn. So
it is.
Yeah. But that is not what we're here to talk about this week. We are, of course, here to talk about all the soccer that's transpired since we last convened. It's been a fortnight since we did that. So plenty of Premier League action has gone down. We've also gotten, as you said, into cup action this week already with the return of our favorite tournament, the Caribou Coffee Cup.
Tasty.
It is now no longer my favorite tournament this year.
Since it is now. Well, yeah, you have a lot of reasons.
My side's out. So it started and I'm instantly out, like that coffee sucks again.
Tottenham literally had a cup of coffee in the tournament.
That was about it. That was pretty much it. So yeah, we got dumped out by Fulham early. You guys put out a team in that cup that I feel a little bit is like we're into the Chelsea verse because I saw a Chelsea squad that apparently is from a different reality than what I'm used to.
There was at least one guy on that roster that I was like, I'm sorry, who is this guy?
Well,
he was like a big like young gun that we brought in. Never heard of him.
Sure. Yeah. I knew one name like comfortably on that squad and that was Connor Gallagher. And that
captained the side.
I know it's a weird in its own right. So that feels weird. It felt like, you know, you stepped through the looking glass a little bit and you're like, this Chelsea doesn't have any players I know on it. This is clearly a different universe that I'm in right now.
Well, given the transactions we've made this season, we do have like four teams.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there's a whole other team that you can see that's also Chelsea that you've never heard of anybody.
Next week.
Stay tuned.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we had the Carabao Coffee Cup. We had obviously MLS back in full swing, Premier League in full swing. We just last week had both the League's Cup finale and Open Cup semifinals.
Lots of cupping
with the goat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start in the Premier League.
Ooh, that was quite the tease. You're like, oh, the goat. And now we're going to go and talk about
And now we're going to talk about Spurs winning a game a week and a half ago.
Thanks. Yeah, that's great.
We didn't pod last week. So the week before, though, Spurs, United, I wanted to hit this match because I feel like that it tells two interesting narratives right now. Narrative one, despite their Carabao Coffee Cup mishandlings, Spurs looking good and looking fun.
Ugh. It has been a fresh breath of air. Even the loss to Fulham, which Spurs at times looked really good in as well. It has been a revelation. Like after 6 years of defensive-oriented managers, I mean, we knew this was going to happen. We knew the free-flowing nature of Ange Postecoglou's squad was going to be this way, but it's taken to a little pretty quickly. In fact, I was a little nervous about the United match because we had looked so vulnerable against lesser competition in our first week that I was like, well, you know, hey, if they can slice us up, there's no way that this United side that are stocked full of these great attacking talents isn't going to have an easier time with that. And it just wasn't the case at all. Spurs played magnificently, at times looking a little shaky defensively, but they went forward with just so much verve and gusto and desire in a way that we just haven't been treated to as Spurs fans. And that was the reason why I got into Tottenham. When they first attracted my eyeballs was in when they brought in Klinsmann, and they had this side that just would go at players, would go at teams, even when it was probably not recommended. And it cost them a lot, but it was fun to watch. And this Postecoglou side is going to get caught, and they did indeed. Sure. Against Fulham. But he said that. He was like, we are going to have hiccups in the early stages of adopting this. This is exactly what happened in his reign at Celtic. And he predicted this happening. And he's like, hey, we had to rotate this squad so I can see if these guys can do what I need them to do. Like, this is part of it as well. So it's frustrating that we coupled up this fantastic performance against United with this match against Fulham, where they didn't quite look as good. But it really did underline, like you said, we looked like a side that could make some waves this season if things go the way that we want them to.
I think the thing that kind of encapsulates all of that is the fans chanting, I got my Spurs back.
There were a lot of chants this weekend and last that really felt like the team was back a little bit. It was weird, you know, letting go of Harry Kane in the last 2 weeks was a lot, you know, to kind of digest. And we've all been kind of like, what is life after Harry like? And everyone's kind of rallied around Ange and the idea that he's kind of brought to this squad. And he's super likable, if nothing else. Like, he's one of those managers you have a hard time getting aggrieved with. And maybe he's just not giving me much opportunity to get pissed off about yet. But I like the mentality at the club, within the fan base, the negativity that's kind of surrounded Tottenham and our support over the last few years kind of feels like it's evaporated a bit over the last month or so. Let's just hope it continues to do so.
You know, we're going to talk about transfers here in a bit. Do you feel like there is something that still needs to be done in this window? I mean, then not a lot of time to get that done, but do you still think that there's something they're going to try to do, they need to do? They got a lot of money. They got a lot of money to play with. You know, they got that Kane money.
They do have a lot of Kane money that's at their disposal right now. And that's undoubtedly going to burn a hole in any sporting director or director's pockets. In the limited sample set we've had so far, I am not seeing Richarlison as the long-term answer to what's going to need to happen at R9. He's doing an okay job of linking play. You know, he did get a goal against Fulham. You know, he does seem to have the support of his teammates so far. So maybe that's, you know, part of the equation. Like, he's just going to be one of those kind of target men that doesn't actually contribute a lot of goals. I can't see him being happy about that, but I think Spurs have to bring in another striker. Like, it's not a question. And Son can obviously run the nine of it himself as well, but, you know, after a season where he was laid up injured for most of it, I'm a little concerned about that. But the hot talk right now is that they're in for Nottingham Forest's Brennan Johnson, potentially dumping out £50 million for the youngster. Who's
Chelsea saw that price tag and was like, now we're cool.
Spurs were like, well, we've got $100 million. So
yeah,
why
not? Hey, listen, you had your chance to get Lukaku.
What, I mean,
he was right there for the taking.
He was, and for certainly far less. So
yes, I mean, a bargain purchase if there was one.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful that they dip back in. There are some other things I'd love for us to do too, but Stryker just looms large.
So the other side of this equation is United losing emphatically in this match. They win their other two matches so far in the season, but in both those matches, they had to come back to grab wins against far inferior sides, at least what we expect to be inferior sides. I'm still not 100% sure what their plan is in the transfer window. Are they going to try to make some big moves? Are they doing nothing? Are they getting rid of Jadon Sancho? I mean, there's a lot of weird things that are thrown out there. I don't exactly know what their plan is. But for a club that I was super high on heading into this season, there's a twinge of alarm bells going off.
Yeah. I mean, well, this squad still is like a hodgepodge squad, right?
Exactly.
Like
there's
a lot of managers wrapped up in its composition so far and a lot of different sporting directives that they followed during that time, even though Ed Woodward was pulling a lot of those strings. He was being influenced by the guys who were in the hot seat. And, you know, I think we all kind of think Ten Hag and their current setup is working, at least to a better extent than what had been in place prior to this. But it still doesn't seem like they've worked out everything, right? And they've got this like collective of guys at the attack that they have too many bodies. And clearly some people need to move on. Luckily, Mason Greenwood is finally one of them. Miraculously, the club in the last 2 weeks came to their senses over that one.
Finally. Somehow.
Hey, maybe we shouldn't keep this guy who's probably a rapist on our squad. I know he wasn't convicted, but maybe. But United still find themselves in this kind of up and down. And like you said, their performances that were wins have been a little unconvincing so far. And, you know, against Nottingham in this last match out, they were down 2-0 in the opening 4 minutes of the match. Like, at Old Trafford, that's a bit of some wild stuff. Now, credit to United, they did claw themselves back out of that match at Forest. They did it previously in the match before that as well. But they're not going to be able to claw themselves out of every situation. They have so much quality in that squad, they can. Like, Eriksen, Casemiro, and Fernandez. Like, that midfield, just those three, is kind of stupid. But can Ten Hag get all these pieces moving in the same direction? And so far, it's hit mixed results so far this season, at least.
I really quickly, I want to hit one other match that I feel like tells a bit of a story, and that is Liverpool getting a solid result over the weekend at Newcastle. A match where Newcastle looked to be the team that was going to come out ahead in this one, even benefited from Virgil van Dijk getting a red card in this one. But Klopp got the last laugh, and I think in a early season that I think people are already wondering if Liverpool has what it takes to be right up there with everyone, especially with some of the transition they've had in their roster. This was such a good result for them to be able to pull this one out.
Yeah, especially since they started the match so poorly. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, the red card for Van Dijk. An early goal not long before that for Newcastle as well. This Liverpool side is a kind of almost like United to a certain extent this year. Like, a team that has a lot of questions hanging over it. Like, what are we going to be this season, this campaign? And it seemed like, ooh, it's going to be another one of those rocky ones for Liverpool. But then they fought back, and it's like they rediscovered, like, hey, we are still mostly that team that won the league a couple of years ago. Like, we could do this.
Well, and they fought back through two goals by Darwin Nunez, who, you know, that was kind of the big scuttle here early on, was like, why is Klopp not playing this guy?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a little bit the reliance on the old, right? Like, he's kind of got like a set of guys that are lingering on from that last campaign, and maybe he's, or last successful one, and maybe he's feeling a little bit of desire to show some loyalty to them. I'm not entirely sure. Nunez, though, he is one of those guys that you like to bring on late because he's just an agent of chaos. Yeah. Like, he just goes out there and he might karate chop you, like, in the face. Like, that could totally happen. But he could also punch a goal in. And in this case, he punched in two and rescued the day for him. So I think it was a great result. I agree with you totally for them. And I think it potentially is like one of those momentum changing type of results for Liverpool's season.
Let's talk transfer window. The deadline is this weekend or Friday or something.
Friday
is the deadline.
Dildo day.
Yeah.
For those of you who weren't there for that, yeah, and you can't see Jeremy actually motioning it, which was even better with his remote.
With my remote, with the
dildo he just keeps on his couch.
Gotta have him.
You do every once in a while. You guys can't, if you weren't like following soccer that closely, the day that happened, that was also in like the nascent times of soccer Twitter. And it's like early popularity. And I was at work and I remember looking at my phone and it literally being inundated with purple dildo pictures. Like my feed was so full of memes about that shot. we've not had a moment like that again.
Well, it was like shortly after that, they like went to like, hey, we're going to make sure they're like in like the lobby of the training center that they're standing out.
We can't have these guys just standing out by the street that any
passerby can just come, you know, accost. I feel like there was really a golden era of transfer deadline day.
Ooh,
whether like, it was just chaos, there were big names that were going to move at the last second. And like just there was something magical about that coverage.
Oh, I mean, the Sky Sports coverage was kind of era defining a little bit as well. Like the way that they covered the game back then, it was almost like they pushed the narrative forward. They weren't so much reporting it. They were so much like deeming it had happened. Like if it didn't get announced on Sky Sports, then it may as well not have actually been something that went down. And oh man, I do nostalgically look back a little bit on that.
Who was, I forget, Odemwingie, the guy that was, he was interviewed in his car as he was in the parking lot waiting for news of his transfer.
He was trying to force a transfer. Move. He was trying to force a move. And I don't know if he was leaving or he was trying to leave
the parking lot of the place he wanted to move to.
Yeah. And they were like, you can't come in.
Yeah. Stay out in your car. You don't. Yeah. Work
and I don't think he signed for that club either.
No, so, no. I think he ended up having to go hat in hand back to whatever club he was at the time.
I mean, transfer deadline day did hit its peak then. Like it will, those moments we'll never have those again. Like the PR lessons that were learned in that era have taught a lot of things. We still occasionally do see like this club couldn't get their fax machine to work. And so this transfer failed as a result.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, what that happened in January, remember, with Chelsea.
Yeah, that's right.
Ziyech was supposed to go somewhere, I think to PSG on loan. And like the paperwork got filed like 5 minutes too late.
I mean, them's the breaks.
Bummer. You're out of luck.
To do your business at the 11th hour and then some.
Speaking of Chelsea, they made a few transfers this window.
Oh, that's how they constructed the Chelsea verse squad.
Yes. So not counting loans in or out. And with a few still kind of waiting in the wings, I have it down as 13 in, 13 out.
I mean, that's an insane amount of changes. You guys also needed to have a net out.
Yeah.
I saw someone calculating that Chelsea for this season is likely going to exceed the fair play ratio by 2. Like, they're going to double the amount they're allowed to spend for the violation. So they would have violated it once, and then they're going to violate it a second time over with the net spend of how they're going about their business right now. It is a little bit, I heard a joke, I think, on Football Ramble, where they were like, I think it was them, said something along the lines of, like, it's Monopoly money. Like, it's not even real to them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's been wild how they've done it. Their net spend has so far kind of kept them in the good. Also, the way that they've structured these contracts, where most of these guys are having, like, 7-8 year deals.
Yeah.
That then kind of the financial fair play hit gets kind of strung out along those years.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a wild one. It's almost hard to keep track of all the guys that are in. And yet at the same time, I think we still don't have a striker.
Amazing.
A guy. I just don't think he is the guy.
I mean, you sold one of them to Arsenal.
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious.
I mean, it is kind of hilarious.
We got Arsenal to give us like 60 something million for Havertz, and United to give us like 50 for Mason Mount.
That's insane to me.
And it's both of them, really also insane. Both of them have done absolute zilch so far in the season.
To be fair, I think Mount's been hurt for the most part, hasn't he?
Maybe. I don't know.
And kind of
Havertz has just been terrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could see Chelsea being like, be someone else's problem. Whereas a little bit on the other end, I'm a little surprised by that move. But yeah, you guys have been just not the squad that I thought you were going to be coming into the season. You've not shed near the number of players that I think would really be required to help out your number situation, right? Like, you probably need like another 5 or 6 to go.
Yeah, we need a few more to go. So Callum Hudson-Odoi is going to be leaving.
Oh my god, he's still there
tomorrow.
It.
He's going to be transferred to Nottingham Forest on a permanent move.
I mean, amazing, because he's been tied to Chelsea for how long?
Well, like, he's been tied to Chelsea since he was like 10.
Right.
So. Like, literally, he was famously a ball boy in a match for Chelsea where, like, he celebrated with Samuel Eto'o.
Amazing.
Like, that's how long he's been hanging around the club. And now he's yesterday's news.
So let's move on from Chelsea stuff, unless there's some other point you wanted to on about.
Sheer numbers. We're just working in volume.
If you had to guess the most expensive player that's been signed during this summer transfer window, who would you guess it is?
Most expensive as in
all of world football, who is the most expensive player or purchase so far this summer?
I mean, I think the easy answer would say be Caicedo, but that means that that's not the answer.
You're right. It's right. I was intrigued to see if you get this. It looks like, at least according to Transfer Market, Declan Rice has him notched out by like 1/6 of a million pounds. So 600,000 pounds, somewhere in that neighborhood. So he just inches it out, but it is too sides out of the Premier League once again that have the two top signings. Also a lot of money for Arsenal, for a club that was kind of in austerity mode for so many years.
Yeah, they spent pretty wild this window.
Yeah, I mean, this window they've spent a bit of money. That you know, obviously they spent 75 million euros for Havertz still is just highway robbery. I mean,
we fleeced him. We fleeced him so hard.
You really did. I'm blown away by that sometimes. But I mean, yeah, they've been very active in it. Another kind of quiet window from City as well. They're just quietly just picking up pieces and doling off pieces and
doing. They brought in one or two guys. Sold Laporte. couple other, like, you know, they were the ones that, like Chelsea, most of their outbound players were going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. I mean, João Cancelo is one of those players too that they're trying to dump off. Mm-hmm. He may or may not be moving to Real Madrid, or excuse me, Barcelona. But it's just, it's been a window that's been very dominated by like big time moves. Like, I feel like this has been a expensive window compared to previous summer ones. You know, obviously Jude Bellingham's a big one that's in there. Harry Kane obviously is in there. Neymar moved on. I mean, just,
yeah,
these are some really big names. He got
paid in airplanes and houses, but
I mean, it'd be hard to say no.
You have like also like moves that, man, I did not see that one coming down the pike there. Brighton is getting Ansu Fati.
What?
Yeah, Brighton.
From Barcelona?
Yes. That got the Fabrizio here we go this evening.
That feels a little bit like Shaqiri going to Stoke.
It is, but like it was if Shaqiri was still like 23 or something like that.
And still highly rated. Yeah, right. It does speak a little bit to the situation that Barcelona find themselves in financially, I think, that they're letting a player, especially a Cantera player, go. That just is kind of surprising. So,
well, yeah, I mean, letting a player go, and but not just to anywhere, like freaking Brighton. Brighton is the guy. Like, apparently, he was kind of shopped, or like they kind of shopped him to Premier League clubs, and it's a wild time to be alive that it's Brighton that get to pull the trigger on that one.
The spending power of the Premier League just cannot be matched until we have a European Super League, of course.
Yeah, so Brighton brought in, they're bringing in him. They also had Carlos Baliba. Again, like, a decent bit of money spent for that guy. Mm-hmm. That, like, those are two high caliber big moves for, again, Brighton.
Yeah, I mean, it just, the Premier League sides can roll the dice in that way that they really couldn't a few years ago. That would be a move that would be reserved for a top six side, and now you have Brighton, who admittedly have been rated quite a bit, and they've been able to mine a lot. Yeah, same. And you know, we've been able to see them mine a lot of talent out of nothing. They've kind of played that money ball game, but it also shows they're a little bit confident, like, hey, we can go out and roll the dice on a bigger player now because we can stability wise afford to do that. And, you know, having that dollar behind you certainly helps quite a bit. And Brighton have certainly flexed a little bit here.
Other moves, Tyler Adams, signing with Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. Good to see him back in the Premier League. I like that move for him.
I hope he stays healthy. I think that's what we really need to see out of him. I think from a national team perspective, that obviously will help the U.S. tremendously, but he just hasn't really gotten his feet underneath him. And you could see that he was pretty gutted to not be able to help Leeds stay up, and had kind of a pretty heartfelt message that he left for them on social media about what he wasn't able to do for them. And I think he's a player that can be extremely effective in the Premier League. We saw when he was in for Leeds, they were a different side. Like, he really can change the dynamic for a team. So I hope he gets a chance to prove himself with Bournemouth this season.
Any other moves that kind of pinged your radar?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, while we're talking about Americans, Pulisic's move to AC Milan has gotten off to a flying start.
That team's just a... I'm definitely...
They're fun to watch.
To root for that one. They're like, yeah, they're Chelsea, Italy.
It feels a little bit like, the late 90s and early 2000s again, with AC Milan being an entertaining side to watch once again.
They start four Chelsea players.
Why not? He's collecting them.
Pulisic, Giroud, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, which I still have to be reminded is on that team. And then Tomori.
Italy is feeling increasingly like the new Turkey for like where players who don't quite pan out in the Premier League go next for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not quite ready to go to Saudi Arabia or Turkey for that matter. Or MLS. Sure. I'll go cut it up for a little bit in Italy now. But it is good. It's good to see Pulisic doing well, instantly betting in and making himself known and effective for a Champions League side. Like, I think that's more important than anything. I wanted him to get into that squad so that way he can get the Champions League minutes that come along with getting into that particular squad.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move stateside. We have Leagues Cup wrapped up. Let's hit that first. So you had Inter Miami and going on their run through mm-hmm. this tournament. Get all the way to the final against Nashville. Take it to penalties. Win it. This is silverware numero uno for Messi and company.
Mm-hmm.
And
for Miami, for that matter.
And for Miami, right? This is a new territory for them as well, just as a club.
Right.
We see that happen. First of all, let's talk Leagues Cup on a more broader basis. Was this a successful tournament, like this new thing?
I don't...
Because here's the thing, like, I enjoyed watching it.
I did too.
I still am not 100% okay with how it was built out to where, like, the leagues take an entire month off.
Not a fan. You could interdisperse this, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's the play. And then obviously Liga MX, like, had buyer's remorse, like, halfway through this entire tournament.
For sure. I think the buy-in from Liga MX East on the whole, you know, there were a few sides that showed some metal on the way through it, but
mm-hmm.
there were clearly some sides that were like, this ain't a priority. And
not only was it not a priority, but then you also just had like the entire league kind of lost their mind about things. They were questioning the refereeing and saying that they were going to monitor it. They obviously mm-hmm. were very vocal about the fact that this was a tournament that wasn't getting to take place in Mexico at all. It was just in the US and Canada.
Right.
Which it's understandable why they did that,
mm-hmm.
but it's also understandable why like Liga MX can be like, well, this kind of sucks for us.
Yeah.
Like the teams can feel aggrieved. Obviously from a ticketing standpoint, the draw does not work the other way.
Mm-mm.
There's not just a bunch of Seattle Sounders fans living in Guadalajara. Like,
right.
It's not a thing where like in Seattle, there's a ton of like Chivas fans in the near vicinity that will spend the money and get in the car and drive to go watch their team play.
Right. I think there are a lot of different metrics that I think, and this is like a classic MLS term, right? That we're going back to like the days of the crew potentially getting moved and the business metrics side of soccer. I mean, MLS will probably rate it as an overall success. I could see too, you know, some of these Mexican sides, if they had hosted matches, drawing decently for them. Like I'm currently sure. watching a Champions League match for CONCACAF right now, and the stadium is a quarter full, like they typically are for most Champions League matches. I think there's a little bit of a question about like how any of that would have filled up. Like if a midweek match against another Mexican side, would it do any different? I don't know the answer to that. I do think that MLS benefited tremendously from a certain player's arrival in the middle of the tournament. kind of resuscitating that situation in Miami and capturing the eyes and attention of American sports for a couple weeks. Like,
sure. I mean,
Messi mania is real. It's a real freaking thing.
And that's a good point, because if Messi was not in the league, this tournament is getting zero run from ESPN and the likes. Zero.
Absolutely none. So I think the success of this is very much altered by Messi's arrival in the middle of it. I could totally see it getting scrapped. I could also see it getting reincarnated maybe in a couple of years. Like, I can't see this being an every year thing. Like, they need 2 years to let it cook a little bit and come up with a better way to make it work and more beneficial for all the sides involved.
What about a League's Cup is back tournament?
Make it, if they put them all at Disney,
you know,
all at Disney, and they have to play on those two fields with the computer generated advertisement boards
and with COVID restrictions for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Just bring
just
it back.
To get the vibes back.
Just to get it back. I'd be okay with that. I'd definitely be okay with that.
Let's talk Open Cup again. Miami is involved in this one. Real quickly, let's hit on the other game. Houston over Real Salt Lake. Just shout out to Houston. They are like low key, really good. We were talking about this before the podcast. Mm-hmm. They're like low key, a really good side. Like, yeah. They've had a sneaky good season.
Yeah, we just saw them down the crew a few minutes ago in decent fashion. It's easy for Houston to be sneaky because literally no one watches them either in their stadium.
No, it was very empty.
Or in most MLS circles for that matter either. But yeah, Houston, you know, obviously they're going to be the other side trying to be the first team to not lose to Messi since he's come to America.
We have that to amend that. Nashville got the 0-0 draw with them tonight.
Okay. I mean,
so
they didn't lose. That's
they didn't
fair.
Lose, but they also did
also
not win.
Have
the
not
first
won
team against. To get to actually nick Miami and get a win is going to be a big moment.
It is going to be a big moment. We also too, and I think this is worthy of mention, is just the longevity and capability of Messi and co to keep up this current pace just seems unsustainable. And I think we're starting to see that. Tata Martino was saying before this Nashville match that these next three matches, he was definitely looking to kind of rotate this squad and rest this new core of players that's come through. I'll be honest, I didn't watch this match and don't know how much off the top of my head Messi, Busquets, and Alba actually played. But I think we are going to see like them take their foot off the gas a little bit. But, you know, looking at the table, they have 10 points to make up. And obviously Miami are not going to win all these games. Like they're just, it's not possible.
So Messi, Busquets, and Alba all started this match tonight.
So no rest yet.
No rest. Well, they rested over the weekend in New York. Messi came off the bench.
Right. So
that's been it. I mean, otherwise he's out there pretty much going the full 90.
Well, I think, and what kind of pressure is MLS feeling? Are they putting him under to play in every match too? Like, I think we've reached a point in pro sports with these dynamics, ticket prices and secondary markets and all these things where if you're charging at your primary market rate, you know, triple, quadruple, five times the amount that your normal face value tickets are, and Messi doesn't play.
Oh, the city's going to burn.
I mean, the optics of that for MLS could be legitimately crippling.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can't not play him. If he's fit enough to play, he has to get a few minutes, like a 20-minute run on the field.
He has to make an appearance. So let's talk FC Cincinnati, Inter Miami in the semis. I was there. I don't know if you made it out to that one.
I
was lucky enough. Yeah, I was lucky enough to not only make it out to that one, but actually we had our season ticket seats. So I was nice and close.
Yeah.
Got to see the goat in the flesh. Nice up and close. But wow, what a match. Wow, what a match. Yeah, a historic moment in Cincinnati soccer history of just a player of that magnitude playing in a real match in our city.
How many times have we said this on this podcast over like the last decade that we've been doing this, where we've been like, how, like, this was unthinkable a few years ago. Like, we've had to have said that 2 or 3 dozen times over the last 10 years.
Yeah. Lionel Messi playing a knockout round semifinal match in Cincinnati. Yeah, definitely didn't see that one happening.
No. I mean, it's just one of those things that seemed as unreal as Alan Pardew, you know, giving us gracious compliments.
Yeah.
You know, like, those are the type of things that felt surreal then, and now Messi casually strolls into the Queen City and does messy things while he's here.
Does messy things. A match where FC Cincinnati played their game and played it almost to perfection for 96 minutes.
I'm going to hit pause actually on that for a second. They actually played a vastly different game than what they normally do. It was a side that really changed up their strategy in a way that I a little bit doubted their capability of doing it.
But they didn't go the full Philly, where Philly completely changed things up and it burned them horribly.
Well, I think that's a testament to the way that they went about that, right? Like, Cincinnati were content to give up the ball, but didn't immediately, it wasn't like, if that pass doesn't work out, like, there was intent to build as well. And I do think they were like, hey, we're going to sit and we're going to wait for our opportunities, and they're going to look for and try to keep Messi as far away from goal as possible. I think that was the mainline strategy, was to keep him 20, yeah, 30 yards
keep him away there, from have
the goal line.
Nwobodu and Moreno just causing havoc in the midfield and just making that very disconnected.
Yeah.
Where they couldn't just run it right through them.
You know, I think there are a lot of people that were perhaps concerned with FC Cincinnati, you know, getting knocked out of the Open Cup, you know, making it as far as they had, and, you know, the opportunity to potentially get silverware into the cupboard. Yeah, it definitely looms large here as well. But I was just really, I think it actually, the result strengthened my like opinion of what this team is capable of because of how well they adjusted their game plan to make this potential match happen. And I think they literally were the team that had Miami probably on the most ice so far this year, since Miami has become this new Miami. And I do think if they can get that type of result or perform that type of way again, if they face this team, say if Miami squeaks into the playoffs,
likely be their opponent if they're able to get through that play-in.
That's the barrel of the gun you're looking at as your reward for finishing first in the conference and having.
Congrats on the Supporter Shield. Here's Miami.
Here's Messi again. Which, by the way, like, think of how hard it was to get a ticket for this match. Just think of that. Now, to be fair, that Miami side would have to go through a wild card match first to then be rewarded with the responsibility of FC.
They also have to make up about,
I think it's,
I mean, they really need like
points.
It's, I think it was 12 going into this weekend or this match day. It was like around 12. But again, that's like 12 if like the teams at the line don't ever get another point.
Right. So there's just, it's still a pretty big mountain that they have to climb, but, you know, can Messi and Miami wriggle their way in? I think it's a little foolish to say they can't. Like, I feels a little bit like they could.
It seems incredibly unwise to bet against that at the moment.
Yeah. I'm not a betting man, but I will give you the advice to steer clear of that one. It was a really cool experience seeing how the city rose up. The event. I will tell you, while I wasn't there, I heard tremendous things about the pro Cincinnati aspect of the crowd. Full shout out to the Bailey too for putting up an amazing Ezra Charles inspired TIFO for the night. I thought that was incredible. But also too, around town, like I was out at a bar in Westchester, which is 30 minutes outside of downtown Cincinnati, and it was full. I'm telling you, full of FC Cincinnati fans that were out watching the game. So the experience got the crowds out, but also really showed that this city is so bought in to the squad that's available to them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was moving around town throughout the day just for work stuff and other things. And there was a buzz everywhere I went where it was the topic of conversation.
Yeah.
Also, let's hit this right here. Cookie Gate.
Ow.
Is this, I felt like it's a rare thing when like both sides of the coin are being ridiculous about a situation.
I mean,
is it kind of ridiculous for Buskin to make a bunch of messy cookies? Yeah, a little bit. Although I kind of wanted one.
I actually went
to the Buskins over at Oakley, and they'd either had already sold out at that point or had been cyberbullied out of selling them. One of the two.
Yeah, if you're unaware and not from Cincinnati, and there probably aren't many of you left that listen to the show that aren't, but a local bakery in the lead up to this particular FC Cincinnati hosting Miami match with Messi.
A local bakery that's been in the city for like 200 years.
Yeah, I mean, they are like an institution. And whenever an event's happening here, they make cookies for it. Well, they did that again, and they made a messy cookie with his face on it. And there was a large segment of the population of fans in this community that found that to be an unacceptable move by a local bakery to try to profit in any
I believe
capacity.
The term was small city energy.
You know,
we are a mid market.
Yeah,
size wise, we are not Chicago.
Yeah.
We're not Dayton or
even
Jacksonville.
Louisville. Or even Louisville, right?
We're definitely not Louisville.
Yeah. But we are a small market. Like we are a small city. It's fine. It's okay to embrace.
We're identified as that in every other sport we play in. We are a small market baseball team. We are a small market NFL team.
Two. Big cities do this shit too.
Sure.
Yeah, like you're gonna tell me there wasn't some bakery in New York City that didn't make cookies or something for Messi's arrival. Of course that happened. Like of course
it just didn't get the traction because there's 900 historic bakeries in New York, where here there's like two.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. Where did you fall on the divide?
Well, again, I felt like both. I felt like it was a bit ridiculous to freak out about the cookies. And it was a little goofy that the cookies happened.
For sure.
But I also really wanted one of those cookies. Like
I did too.
I actually want one of those cookies now. Now that we're talking, like now I want a cookie.
Would you eat it or would you keep it as a keepsake?
Gosh, I think I'd buy two and kind of eat one and then like let the other one kind of, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the shelf life is where that doesn't get, you know, gamey on you.
Is it like on your year anniversary of your wedding, you pull the cake
out of the freezer?
Yeah.
That's it. Maybe I just freeze the cookie. Just put it in our back basement freezer for just forever.
Hey, Buskin, this is your chance to get a sponsorship deal on our podcast right here.
Just pay us in cookies.
That's all you have to do.
I want a messy cookie. And then what would be another ridiculous cookie to have? Can I get a Ryan Gosling and Ides of March cookie?
Ooh, I mean that would be
a movie shot here in Cincinnati.
That's true. Oh man,
shot here in Cincinnati where they actually acknowledge, hey, this is Cincinnati. Like that's actually in the script instead of like, you know, this like Airborne or whatever, or some of those other like
movies
where it's just like, hey, we're just in a place.
If I were to get a Buskin cookie for my hometown, it would probably have to be a Buskin cookie with like a copy of Hillbilly Elegy on the front.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I want that cookie, but that's what it would have to be.
What about a cookie of your high school classmate Vivek?
I mean, he would probably have something to say about it, undoubtedly.
But then you could eat his face. And who's the real winner there? You could eat his face.
I mean, I don't know. Who knows what would happen if you ate Vivek's face? There's probably some sort of hell to pay for that. Before we scare away any of our partisan followers, let's move on.
We did that 4 years ago.
easily 4 years ago. What part of the show are we at now?
We are at winners and or wankers.
Everyone's favorite part of the show. That's what part we're at.
I gotta make a comment here. I don't have a winner. I just have two wankers.
That's the best weeks are when there are extra wankers, to be fair. So does that mean I should cushion this in with like my winner choice?
Well, let's get all of our wankers out of the way, and then you can see us out with a positive thing.
All right, it's always better to wank first. So
as one does.
That's true. Well, give me the first, since you have two. Give me the first of your wankers.
So my first wanker is whoever is responsible for the fact that in the year 2023, the majority of the Carabao Coffee Cup matches that happened this week had no broadcast. Mm. None. Nobody. There was no, unless you bought a ticket and were at the grounds, you did not see this match.
Is this a strategy that's being employed to promote ticket sales? Is that what this is?
Possibly. I mean, we're in an era where a second round or third round or whatever it is, U.S. Open Cup match between the Villages FC.
Our favorite.
And some other equally ridiculous NPSL squad.
War Dogs SC from...
What was that one? Bear Fight.
Oh, that was a good one, too.
Bear Fight FC and the Villages would still have a YouTube broadcast.
Yeah.
Per USSF setup there for the Open Cup.
It does make you feel a little bit better when we have all these debates here about like the status of soccer in this country. And we're like, man, there aren't enough U.S. Open Cup games. Like, this is our oldest competition.
The girls' high school game that took place two blocks from my house at the neighborhood high school had a webcast.
And you would think the demand would be higher for some of these Caribou Coffee Cup matches.
And yet, Chelsea versus Wimbledon had nothing today. You couldn't watch it.
Nobody wants to watch this fake Chelsea side that stepped through a portal from a different universe to play against
the Coke Zero of Chelsea.
Yeah, that's for sure what we got treated to tonight. All right, well, there's your first wanker. It's just whoever's responsible for making that not happen.
How that's possible in 2023.
It's got to be a money thing. It's got to be something down to they didn't get
the sponsorship. It's got to be some strategy that's incredibly nearsighted.
Yeah. My wanker. Mine's a two-part wanker. I'm giving it to a pair. They're linked together. There's no way I cannot give it to not just Spanish FA president Luis Rubiales, who's deservedly in the hot seat, if you hadn't heard about this somehow, for kissing newly crowned World Cup winner Jennifer Hermoso on the mouth during the medal ceremony during the World Cup final. Rubiales
and like carrying a player over his shoulder during the celebration.
He also grabbed his crotch a couple times.
He got a big handful of that guy.
He was all into it. So Rubiales, it gets the first half of this. He's refusing to resign after over 80 female and male players have refused to be called up to the national team. The entire staff of the Spanish women's side, minus head coach Jorge Vilda, who has also failed to resign, even though over a dozen players boycotted the World Cup over him, has stepped down. Everyone but him has stepped down. All of the regional presidents of the Spanish Federation have asked for him to step down. A ban from FIFA, who are famously shitty at handling women's issues.
Right. This is generally not their bag.
It's not their thing, but they did it. An investigation from Spanish federal authorities into his behavior and his finances. His uncle, a former high-ranking staff member in the Spanish FA administration, making claims of underage girls at parties. And also his mother, just adding icing onto the cake, is putting herself through a hunger strike.
So that's my other wanker is Angeles Bahar began her hunger strike inside the Divina Pastora Church in Motril, Spain on Monday. She has since been hospitalized due to this.
And she's doing it not in support of the girl he kissed.
No, rather.
Because she feels her son
is being dragged to the mud here.
Yeah. His cousin, I guess, was out talking smack about Jenny Hermoso as well in the press.
I saw a great tweet about this where someone was like, so let me get this straight. The Spanish Federation president has been suspended by every organization except for the Spanish Federation.
It's amazing. It's incredible. So I'm going to tag in the other part of this. The Spanish FA has to get roped in on all this. They have been insane through this process. Not only
they're like doubling down. Total, like, this is the hill we're dying on.
Not only are they just backing Rubiales, they're openly speaking of seeking legal action against Jennifer Hermoso for defamation. They concocted a written statement from Hermoso saying the kiss was consensual, which she has outright denied on multiple occasions.
Yep.
And this is truly one flew over the cuckoo's nest. They're now lobbying UEFA to have themselves expelled for governmental interference over federal investigations into Rubiales, a move that would see all of their club sides removed from European competition. Like, they're literally going to burn it down for him. It makes you a little bit go, what does he know?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, man, what skeletons are in the closet that this man can just throw out in the open if he gets dumped?
I don't know. It's a bit.
Sounds like it might burn to the ground either way.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially. So just a truly, like, awe-inspiringly crappy situation in Spain that hopefully sees that entire federation burn down somehow without all the players paying the price for it.
Jeez. Yeah. All right. Your winner. Let's go out on a high note.
Yeah. Let's do something positive here. I'm going to give it to MLS. Very rare recipient.
Sweet.
The whole league gets it. All right. So the reason for this, MLS, according to a recent report from Four Soccer, a leading soccer focused marketing, media and experiences company, is apparently the most popular soccer league for American Gen Z soccer fans in this country, which is something that is trend reversing. It has not been the case in this country ever that MLS has been the most popular league.
Wait, because you now have a generation that the league has always existed in their life, and they are children of fans.
Yep.
Like, they're that second or third generation of MLS fans where it's like my dad, you know, and I would go to the matches, you know, growing up. Like, that was their childhood, just like how you and I would go to baseball games as a kid, and that was our childhood, and that was kind of like an instant, you know, gravitational pull to that because that was part of, like, just the fabric of our family ecosystem.
That is music to Major League Soccer's ears. Don Garber needed a report like this. Of course, MLS is probably an investor in this report, I would imagine, at some base level. But all that said, that's just a good vibey feeling, even as we live in this very messy, dominated world, to know that the kids, even before this move, were rating MLS so highly.
Yeah, I guess it can really only go up with the messy effect.
Yeah. Onward and upward from here. That does it for this week's show. If you want to get a hold of Jeremy, he's at Jeremy Lance on the network formerly known as Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond. We'll talk to you guys sometime soon.
See ya.